Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Hour number three of our radio program, Rockin' and Rollin'. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's head out to the guest line right now. We're talking about the biggest story of the day, and that was the Masters from yesterday, where Rory McIlroy not only won his first ever green jacket, he did complete the career Grand Slam, and someone that was on the grounds yesterday at Augusta National was no other than Steve Sands from the Golf Channel, and he's kind enough to jump on board with us for a few minutes right now. Sandsy, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for doing this, and how you been?
I'm doing great, Zach. My pleasure. Always great to be with you, bud. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. I know it's a busy day for you. It's almost 24 hours after Rory McIlroy was able to capture that green jacket yesterday. There were some highs. There were definitely some lows. If you were rooting for Rory, I probably said he was going to win and lose about 3,000 times yesterday. But when you get a moment to digest it and process it, how do you kind of put it into words what you saw yesterday?
Pretty much what you just said. I mean, that was a lot of pendulum swings there, man. It was a wild ride. There was some really great golf. I mean, the second shot at 15, the second shot at 17, the wedge at 18 in the first playoff hole. I mean, some great, great shots. But my goodness, there were some mistakes as well. And the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs, it's one of the things that makes major championship golf so great. It's one of the things that makes Masters Sunday so great. And yesterday was an epic roller coaster ride for sure.
I guess for him to finally exercise those demons at that golf course, he probably had to do it this way, it feels like, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's never easy anyway. I mean, nothing's easy. Even when Tiger was winning all those majors, it wasn't easy. But Rory tends to make it a little bit more dramatic than it needs to be sometimes. And that's okay. You know, there's a big difference between Tiger, Jack, and the rest of the all-time greats. Tiger and Jack kind of plodded their way along. Didn't seem like there were a lot of car wrecks. You know, a lot of really, really bad stuff en route to wins. They didn't win every time. But when they did win, it didn't seem like there were a lot of mistakes like there were from Rory yesterday. And Rory tends to be more like a Phil Mickelson or like an Arnold Palmer. You know, you're talking about three of the greatest players in the history of the sport. And it just tends to go up and down. And there are a lot of emotions involved, a lot of great, great shots, and a couple of really, really bad ones that make you shake your head if you're a Rory fan and go, oh my gosh, here we go again. But this time he recovered. And all credit to him. He played some fabulous golf when he really, really, really had to.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because how the day started, he double bogeyed to start the fourth round on Sunday, and he lost instantly that two-stroke lead. But then he clearly recovered. It looked like he was going to run away from it, and like you mentioned, then it all changed. When he missed that 5-foot putt on 18 that would have won in the tournament, and it felt like momentum clearly shifted to Justin Rose, who was waiting after having that great final round at Augusta. Were you confident? Did you feel like Rory would have the mental toughness to prevail in the playoff, or did you kind of think that Justin Rose was going to get the job done?
It's weird. I actually thought he was going to miss the putt in regulation, and there was going to be a playoff after Justin Rose made that birdie at 18. I remember thinking, okay, at the same time, McIlroy was making a birdie at 17 to take a one-shot lead. And then when he hit the fairway in regulation, I remember thinking, well, this is going to be a wedge. He's going to two putt. He's going to win the Masters by one in regulation. And he put that wedge into a bunker right. And it was really, really, really challenging from that point on. When he lined up for the putt in regulation, Zach, I remember thinking he's going to miss this. For whatever reason, when they got to the playoff, I thought Rory's going to win. I have no idea why. Even when he had that putt to win after Rose missed his putt in the playoff, I remember thinking, wow, this one better go in. But I always thought in the playoff that he was going to win it. So, you know, who the heck knows? But it was That was as wild a ride as we've seen in a long, long time at Augusta for a full day. It's been wild for years. You know, there's a lot of stuff, but I'm talking from the jump, man. It was a crazy, crazy day. It was cool.
And in that playoff, that second shot, you know, that's how I'm going to remember it because, man, with all that he went through the day, to be able to put a shot up like that, that eventually, you know, essentially won in the tournament, it was just impressive with all the lows that were there during that moment and during that fourth and final round for Rory at Augusta.
Well, Zach, think about it. That's the same club he hit in the water at 13. Same club he hit in the water, hit in the bunker on 18 in regulation. And then he hit a great one with the same club in the playoffs. So, you know, how athletes reset and how they go about their business has always fascinated me. And for him to have such disappointment on the 18th in regulation and then come right back in the playoff and win it. Look, the second shot he hit at 15 around the tree onto the green, two putter. He missed the putt for eagle, by the way, two putter for birdie. That came after he hit the wedge at 13 in the water. And then at 17, he hit a beautiful wedge and made a birdie from a couple of feet. And then on 18, he hit a terrible wedge. And then in the playoff on 18, he hit a great wedge. So it's how athletes are able to recover, how they have perseverance and resilience is amazing. And he had a lot of guts yesterday. He did not play razor sharp golf by any means, but he had the guts to get through it. I'm so happy for him. It's an amazing moment, historic moment in golf.
And you cover right stories through your job at the Golf Channel. As Steve Sansanzi is here with us the day after Rory McIlroy completed the career Grand Slam and captured his first ever green jacket at Augusta. You know, sometimes golfers, they don't do the best job, you know, we don't, in showcasing the emotion, and they could be very guarded. The moment he sunk that putt on the playoff to win the tournament and capture the green jacket in the Grand Slam, man, the outpour of emotion, just as a sports fan and a human being, was really cool to see.
Zach, I'm telling you what, man, I've said this for a long time. The individual nature of golf makes it different than team sports. You and I are massive sports fans. We like all sports. Golf is different than every other sport, even tennis on the individual nature, because in tennis, it's just mano a mano. You know, in golf, you're going up against not just the person you're playing in the group with, but everybody else in the field. So when he sunk that putt, that 11-year burden, you know, his lifelong journey was met. His 11-year burden of trying to not just win the Masters, but become the sixth player in the history of men's golf to win the career Grand Slam. There are more players in tennis on the men's and women's side who have won the career Grand Slam. So you could make a case, Zach, you could make a strong case that joining the club of career Grand Slam champions in golf is the single most difficult thing to achieve in all of sports. You could make that argument. And that's what Rory had on his shoulders. That was the burden he had. And that was a heavy, heavy lift for 11 years. It's been 11 years, not since he won, you know, trying to win the career Grand Slam. It's been 11 years since he won a major. He hasn't won a major since August of 2014. He's an all-time great player, best player of his generation. And he'd gone 11 years, by the way, from ages 24, Zach, to 35, right in his prime. It wasn't like he was at the end of his career. So who knows if this opens the door for him to have a lot more, or who knows if he just kind of rests on his laurels. I would not bet on him resting on his laurels.
Well, that's the thing. It's because if, let's say, he would have won the U.S. Open or the Open Championship or the PGA Championship, we would all laud him, right, for winning a major championship and overcoming the 11-year drought. But then eventually the commentary would be, can he find a way in what would have been the 12th year if he didn't win yesterday to get the job done at Augusta? And that's what makes it so cool that you had both moments together. He breaks his major championship drought of 11 years and completes a career Grand Slam. That's what made it awesome for me.
Oh, without question. I mean, they go hand in hand. I mean, only Gene Sarazen has won the Masters to complete the career Grand Slam. And no offense to old Gene, but 1935 is a little different than 2025 and
just
some of the pressures and, you know, just a little different than it was back then. That thing was only started in 1934, so it really wasn't the Masters just yet. It's not discounting what Gene did, but I'm just saying it's been that long since someone did it at the Masters. And the Masters is the one major that goes back to the same venue every year. It's the most prestigious. It's the most elegant, most graceful, and it's the biggest event in the sport. Sunday at the Masters is the biggest day in the game. And Rory, Did he come up big at the end? 100%. Did he come up big throughout the whole day, throughout the whole week? Not always, but he played the best of anybody. He was the best of anybody. He's a deserving champion, and my gosh, did he do something yesterday and this past week that will go down in the history books. It's an astonishing thing that he did, and I'm betting on him playing very, very well the rest of the year and really taking off once he, you know, puts the glasses and bottles down and relaxes a little bit after a couple of days of celebrating, which he should. I think he's going to get right back to work, and we'll see him in a month at the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, and he'll be the favorite going into that week.
Sanzi, Steve Sands here with us from the Golf Channel. Let me get to Bryson, because going into yesterday, even though he was two strokes off the share of the lead and then they were dead even after the first hole, I just thought that Bryson was going to find a way with how cool and calm he is and how much his public kind of image has changed. Were you stunned that Bryson wasn't more of a player yesterday with the way that it looked like it was going to get started after the first hole?
The only reason I wasn't stunned and the only reason I thought Rory was going to win before the day is because Bryson was doing it with smoke and mirrors. He was chipping and putting like a god the first 3 days, and he was not hitting his irons well. And everybody thinks about the greens at Augusta, Zach, and the putting at Augusta. It's the second shots that win you the Masters. Second shots to get it close to holes like 17 and then the playoff for McIlroy. Bryson didn't give himself enough opportunities. He just didn't give himself as many chances as you need to make birdies because his iron play was off all week. Some guys, sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't. He was on it with everything else in his game except for those second shots. His iron play was substandard all week. He knew it. He worked on the range every night trying to fix it, but sometimes you just don't have it. And I didn't think that could, and it almost never does, hold up over 4 days, especially when the pressure rises to its height, which is Sunday in this sport. And you can get away with it on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You cannot get away with that on Sunday. And he went the wrong way. He made a couple of bad decisions, but he made more bad swings than bad decisions. And he played well enough to get himself in contention, but not nearly well enough to win.
How about Justin Rose? 10 birdies on a Masters Sunday. No one was talking about him, even though he was the day one leader after Thursday. But heading into Sunday, right, he was what, 5 under, I believe, to see what he did. Yep. And how he almost won this thing. Man, you've talked about how the legacy would have shifted for him already having a major championship. If he would have got a green jacket as well, that would have definitely moved him up in the way that we view him, even though he has a pretty good spot right now.
44 years of age, Justin would have been the second oldest winner in Masters history to Jack Nicklaus, who was 46 in 1986. He was right there coming in second to Xander Schauffele at the Open Championship 9 months ago. That was the last major played. And now he's right there again. First round leader, second round leader, third round, he shot 75, played terribly, but he recovered and shoots a 66, 9 better on Sunday, made that birdie at 18 to apply the pressure to Rory, which is all you're really looking for when you're playing outside of the last group. And Justin Rose played awfully well. You talk about a U.S. Open at Marion in Philadelphia, talk about a gold medal in Rio in the 2016 Olympics. If he would have added a green jacket, he would have been a shoo-in. I still think he's going to get a lot of votes and might end up being in the Hall of Fame. He would have been a shoo-in to be in the Hall of Fame. He only would have been the third player from England to ever win the Masters. Danny Willett in 2016, Nick Faldo did it 3 times. I mean, it would have been historical stuff. 10 birdies on Sunday at the Masters, Zach. I mean, geez, that's saying something.
So I know this wasn't a filet mignon type of story at the Masters, but it was a big story Friday through the first 2 days. This Jose Luis Ballester, the amateur, that you usually don't want to find Race Creek at Augusta, but he needed to go to the bathroom. I was having fun with it on the air because how many times am I with my buddies? You're playing golf. You got to go to the bathroom and you go basically into the woods. I get it, right? This is Augusta. This is the tradition. But what was the talk kind of around the tournament amongst the patrons and the people in the golf community with what happened with Jose Luis Ballester?
Yeah, I don't know whether he lost his mind or because that could happen in the Masters. Yeah. You know, people go to Augusta and they lose their minds. I get that. He looked around, didn't see a Port-a-John, and one of the advantages of being a man is being able to just, you know,
go wherever.
Go when you want, go wherever. And he went wherever, and I'm not sure Rays Creek at Augusta National while you're playing the Masters is the correct play, but You know, for ingenuity, I give him a 10 out of 10. For smarts, I'd probably go a little bit less than 5. That was a tough play. But, you know, I think people laughed about it. They told him about it. They talked to him. And you can't do that. I mean, like, you know, you don't want to do that. That's not something you're looking to do.
While I have you here, Steve Sands, I know you're a huge fan of the Commanders, and I also know you're a huge fan of the Capitals. What was more enjoying for you this year, the Commanders' run or seeing Ovi move past Wayne Gretzky for the most career goals in the history of the NHL?
Oh, man, Zach, your father, Bob, and everybody at Pine Forest taught you well if you're going to ask a question that great. I mean,
who's your favorite kid? Is it Brian? Is it Eric? Is it Scott? Like, that's what it is right now.
Well, right now, our favorite son is Eric because he's the only one who ever comes home because he's still in college. The other two, you know, Val Sands doesn't love the other two as much because they don't come home as often. They don't call as often as they used to. So,
yeah.
But, the Ovechkin record is something that's been building for years. And it was special, and I followed every single day of it, and it was amazing. And he's the greatest team sport athlete in my hometown of all time. There's no question about that. That was amazing. The joy I get. They've been good for 20 years, though, the Caps. He's been great for 20 years. The joy that me and my family and all Commanders fans got this season is something we haven't had in a long, long time. So I would say that run, that joy was more. But the Ovechkin run and the Ovechkin record, I think the way he handled it, I'm sure you've talked about this, the class and the grace in which he handled it, the joy in which he was playing, the incredible greatness, Gretzky being involved in it, the NHL doing the right thing, the Caps doing the right thing, opposing fans giving him ovations when he would score on the road. I mean, I think people realize he's breaking one of the most sacred records in all the sports. I realize hockey is 4 of 4 in the United States, but I think people have an appreciation for greatness. And, you know, look, Wayne Gretzky held that record, and it was an impossible record to break, seemingly. And Ovechkin broke it. And they didn't nickname Wayne Gretzky the pretty good one. They nicknamed him the great one. And here's Ovechkin now sitting on top of him. By the way, in the same amount of games, which is insane if you think about it. And I thought it was cool. The only thing missing, Zach, the only thing missing from that is that he did it on Long Island. And he didn't do it in D.C., I mean, if you did it at home, it would have been much, much better, but it doesn't matter when he did it, where he did it. The fact is that he did do it. Now let's refocus and go try to win another Stanley Cup. They're good. Caps are pretty good.
Yeah, it's amazing with what they did from last year to this year. It's unbelievable to see how they're playing. And I'm very proud of you that you said on Long Island and not in Long Island. That's a very good job out of you. One more, Steve Sands from the Golf Channel. Safe to say, when you look at your pantheon of sports heroes right now, right? You got Jaden Daniels up there. You obviously also have Alexander Ovechkin. I'm assuming that Kevin Willard is no longer on there, correct?
No. I like Kevin. Kevin's a friend. I like Kevin a lot. I think in private, he probably would say his exit was not as clean as he would have liked. Look, I am not a fan. We get taught by, look, your father, Boomer, probably taught you this when you were a kid, too. By the way, it is on Long Island. You're not in an island. You're on an island.
100%.
I mean, come on now. So I think that, what do I think about Kevin Willard? I think the exit was ugly, and I don't think he had to do what he did. I don't think he had to say what he said out loud. But everything in college sports right now is so screwy. It's so transactional. Our parents taught us when we were kids, Zach, me, you, and everybody else who had good parents, you don't burn the house down on the way out. You don't burn bridges. And I don't know why he decided to do that, but he's a friend. I like him. I think he's a heck of a coach. I wish he would have stayed and, you know, got Maryland all the way to the Final Four national championship status, but he wanted to move along. I just wish he didn't move along in the manner in which he did. But I think privately over a couple of beers, he would probably say to you, yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. But it's okay. He's a tough, like you. You know, he's a tough New York, New Jersey kid.
Safe travels. Have a good flight, Sandsy. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, Zach. You're the best.
There he is. Steve Sands joining us from the Golf Channel the day after Rory McIlroy not only wins a green jacket, but completes the career Grand Slam. We'll take a break. You'll hear from Rory on the other side. We will also get back into the Nico Iamaliava situation and have a few more things to touch on in not only the college football world, but the NBA as well. We got a loaded news brief next.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Most of you heard it on TV. Let's hear how it sounded on the radio. The Masters on Sirius XM. This is the play-by-play, courtesy once again of the Masters on Sirius XM, of Rory McIlroy winning it all at the 2025 Masters.
3 feet, McIlroy walks up to the ball, gets over it for history. With one look, Rory back and through, and he's made it! He's done it! It's a grand slam roar at Augusta National. Rory McIlroy on his knees, bent down in emotion, clutching his head. He's won the Masters. He's won all the grand slam events. He's the sixth in the history of the game to enter golf's greatest group.
So I think it's pretty obvious who it was on that call. Can you tell me who it is, Stu? Just wondering.
I just said to Mike, is it Tirico?
Yep.
It is Tirico. Okay, we weren't sure. It does sound a lot like him.
It is Mike Tirico. I know he does golf for the Masters. I forgot that he did it on the radio, but then when you hear it, I'm like, oh yeah, Tirico does golf for the Masters on the radio. I've heard those calls before through the years. But you don't think of golf with Mike Tirico. You think of, obviously, football with Mike Tirico. And Tirico's done some NBA, too. And he's done more and more this year because one of those deals, I think on the new NBC deal, he's the lead voice, I believe, or something like that. So you get Tirico on golf. But when he started whispering, I'm like, who the heck is that? And I'm like, oh, it's Mike Tirico. Because then he starts speaking as he would normally start to speak when he's announcing something. Here is Rory McIlroy elated after winning the Masters.
You're happy.
I gotta go get a green jacket.
That's awesome. That's great. Here's Rory McIlroy trolling the media after his Masters press conference.
You've now completed the career Grand Slam. Please share with us your thoughts at this moment.
I'd like to start this press conference with a question myself. What are we all going to talk about next year?
If I wanted to be a jackass and I was at that press conference, hey, Rory, I got a follow-up. If you would have lost, would you have talked to the media today? That's what I would have asked. I would have been very curious what the answer would have been from Rory McIlroy. Let's go to Sirius XM. Rory McIlroy, did he believe he'd ever win the Masters?
Yeah, deep down I did. Deep down I did think. Did I have my doubts from time to time? Absolutely. But deep down I always believed that I had the game to win here at Augusta. And I think today, you know, I've proved over the years that I've had the game, but did I have it up here in the head, and did I have the fortitude to get over the line? And, you know, it was touch and go at times today, but thankfully I was able to get the job done.
That Irish accent is very underrated. Stu, is there a way that you could isolate? I know this is on the fly when he says doubts. I've never heard doubt said the way that he said it. Maybe it was just my headphones, but it sounded very interesting, especially with that accent. So we'll give Stu a few extra seconds. So he's probably going to find it through the clip. And then we will get back to this very, 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 very compelling edition of the news brief when it comes to the Masters. And I'm still trying to give Stu a few extra seconds here as we're putting Stu on the spot. And I don't know if I can still throw out another audio clip as Stu's trying to search through this one and find where he says doubts, because he doesn't even say like he says doubts.
Of my doubts.
That sounds like he says darts.
Of my doubts.
Sounds like he combined farts, darts, and doubts there.
Of my doubts.
Well, he definitely had doubts, that's for sure. And when he double bogey to start off the tournament and he's even, and then he got that lead, start off the fourth round, and he got that lead back, and then he just started to crumble. It was all-time euphoria to all-time low. And then back to euphoria with the chance to win the Masters, and then he missed the putt, and you go into the playoff, and he found a way to get the job done. So those darts, farts, doubts, whatever, I guess are now out the window now. One more, Rory McIlroy, burden of never winning the Masters.
I've carried that burden since August 2014. It's been 11 years, nearly 11 years. and not just about winning my next major, but the career Grand Slam, you know, trying to join a group of five players to do it. You know, watching a lot of my peers get green jackets in the process.
Let me ask a question here, because this sets up our next audio clip from Bryson DeChambeau and has to do with Rory McIlroy. Samter, if you've never won a Masters before, and you know that's the missing thing on your resume is to win the Masters to complete the career Grand Slam, and you are paired up with someone who's two strokes behind you and is viewed as your main competition, and you guys are playing the same game together, you guys are paired together, that's the final Masters grouping was Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau. If you were Rory with all that pressure, would you be talking to Bryson throughout the round? You gotta walk 18 holes with someone. Would you be talking to him at all?
Oh, yeah. Like, every other word out of my mouth would be right at Bryson DeChambeau. Of course not. Focused in. Think Tiger's having conversations on, like, a Masters Sunday with his red shirt on? Of course not.
Stu, would you at all have one conversation?
No. No way. I'm just focusing on the game and trying to win the tournament.
I think I am. Now, I'm not saying, like, you have to be happy-go-lucky and talking Bryson DeChambeau's ear off, but not just, like, oh, one good shot or, you know, interesting approach or something. Like, there's not one little comment that you make or, hey, how you doing? You just show up and you don't even talk to the guy all throughout the day. So Bryson DeChambeau said he didn't talk to Rory at all in the final round.
Did you speak to him in there? How's he doing? Do you know?
No idea. No, didn't talk to me once all day.
What was the atmosphere like in there?
Electric. I loved it, but he was just like, just being focused, I guess. So it's not me, though.
Bryson DeChambeau is more my type of guy than Rory McIlroy. Rory was so nervous, and I get it. Bryson was terrible. He stunk yesterday. But he's there to kind of have a good time. And he's won two major championships. I like the personality. I used to think he was a jerk. But the last 2 years, I like the personality of Bryson DeChambeau. Let's go to Josh Heupel, the coach at Tennessee. He said goodbye to Nico Iamaliava. Here was Josh Heupel finally addressing the Nico Iamaliava situation because Nico wanted more money, and Tennessee said basically, go kick rocks as we move along from you as we continue to chant good old Rocky Top. Here's Josh Heupel.
Today's landscape of college football is different than what it has been. And it's unfortunate. Just the situation and where we're at with Nico. I want to thank him for everything that he's done since he's gotten here. That's as a recruit to who he was as a player. And how he competed inside of the building. And so a great appreciation for that side of it. Obviously, we're moving forward as a program without him. I said it to the guys today. There's no one that's bigger than the power tee. And that includes me. And they hear me say that a lot inside of that team room. This program has been around for a long time, with a lot of great coaches, a lot of great players that came before that laid the cornerstone pieces, the legacy, the tradition that is Tennessee football. It's going to be around a long time after I'm done and after they're gone. And that's what's special about being here is that there is a legacy and a tradition that is so rich and a logo that's recognized not just across the nation but across the world too. And today you got a chance to see 110 guys that ran out and competed their butts off, that give their all for Tennessee and do it the right way, and really proud of the spring that they've had, but also how they culminated it as well. So excited about where we're at this point.
So two things here. If I could talk to Josh Heupel, I would say, hypothetically, coach, if Arch Manning was your quarterback and he wanted $2 million, would you have found a way to get him $2 million? Because not wanting to give him $2 million, I know you could say, oh, no one's bigger than the program, but it also means you didn't think he was worth it. That's one thing. The second thing as well is the second window opens up April 16th and closes on April 25th. Now, if you enter this portal during this time of the year and you're in the SEC for SEC schools only, you can't go join another SEC school. So I'd be curious, in the Big Ten, the ACC, these other premier conferences, the Big 12, with Tennessee now being open and having a quarterback vacancy, will anyone jump into this portal that wasn't planning on do so to line up and match up with Josh Heupel at good old Rocky Top? Let's go to Josh Pate of Josh Pate's College Football Show. He said Iamaliava and others nearly held out of college football playoff games because of money.
These are the same people who would tell you players would never opt out of playoff games, you know? If we had more playoff games and less meaningless bowl games, then players won't opt out of playoff games. You know, that same crowd fails to mention that this past December, cats like Nico Iamaliava almost held out of playoff games because they were trying to renegotiate contracts in the middle of a playoff run. He wasn't the only one. He wasn't the only one. But just understand, all these people who cannot take a without getting the front of their pants wet, that claim to know what's best for this sport and claim to be visionaries, and boy, they can type a lot of words per minute, can't they? They have not the slightest clue what's best for this sport.
Well, the portal shouldn't be open as the season's still going on. And that's the nasty part of it. I'm all for getting your most money possible. But if you're going to say after playing a full season, oh, I'm not going to play in a playoff game unless if you give me more money, I don't think that's good in terms of NIL and transfer portal. And I'm more pro that stuff. That wasn't the intent behind why players are now getting paid and why you have the ability to transfer. If you're talking about playoff games, you have a guy like Nico Iamaliava asking for more money before a playoff game. That's where I think the system's rotten. Let's go to Brian Kelly with his LSU family. He had to comment on the SEC family when it comes to Tennessee and the Nico Iamaliava situation. Here is Coach Brian Kelly talking about a member of his SEC family.
Well, I think we're in this period of adjustment, right? I mean, I think there's changes coming in NIL. I think this is the first version of corrections, maybe. But I think that there's going to be other situations that come. And we're just going to have to, you know, do the best we can. I think there's going to be better information out there that will allow people to look at comps for positions and say, that makes sense, that doesn't make sense. And it'll allow us to navigate this a lot more reasonably moving forward, for good or bad. People can make decisions. If you want to pay X, then that's what you can do. But I think this is the natural course that would happen when there weren't many guidelines out there. Moving forward, I think with the House settlement and potentially a clearinghouse for NIL, I think we'll see a better place as we continue to move forward.
I would love to know week to week in the football season if Brian Kelly changed his voice as much. Because at first I thought that wasn't Brian Kelly when he was speaking. And then I'm like, oh no, that is Brian Kelly. Every time he opens his mouth, he sounds different. Here is Fran Brown. He jokes about Syracuse hiring him.
You know, John and Amy Wildhack, John, I don't know how you had those balls to hire me, but thanks for doing that. That was crazy, right? John's been able to do it. I mean, thanks though, right? I don't know if I would have did it, but I appreciate you doing that, right?
Fran Brown is an awesome recruiter. He has a mega personality. I knew Fran Brown when he was an assistant at Temple. I didn't think he was mature enough then to become a head coach. He has grown up a lot recently, and I thought the time at Georgia was massive for him. If he goes has two more successful seasons at Syracuse, he could get a big-time job because that dude has a rock star personality. Let's go to Draymond Green on what went wrong for the Warriors at a loss to the Clippers.
I completely smoked a layup, and Buddy missed a shot.
Was it the shot that he wanted? If you wanted, you guys want it?
Yes, that was the play that was drawn up, and we got the look. He just missed it. GP made a good play in the post, in the pocket, and I smoked the layup.
And let's go to Steph Curry and falling into the playing game.
You have to take the positives of where we were 2 months ago and know our season isn't over. So we would have loved to have, you know, taken advantage of these last four games, and you look at that San Antonio game as one that was a tough beat, but, you know, you have to be able to wash it down the drain quick.
And then finally, I was involved in this conversation. I don't know what the answer is going to be, and I didn't have the conversation with Jaylen Brown, but this goes back to something that happened on my show. When we talk about who's the best point guard ever, Stu, who do you think is the best point guard ever in the history of the NBA?
I think it's still Magic Johnson, but it's close. It's getting closer between him and Steph.
Samter?
Magic.
Ack, greatest point guard ever?
Not even close, Magic.
Okay. So I think it was Gilbert Arenas who said Steph Curry's the greatest point guard of all time, or maybe Steph said on Gilbert Arenas' show, I forget. And I asked Magic Johnson about that. And Magic lost his mind over it in a good way. I thought it was great radio, and he started listing off all the statistics and why he's better than Steph Curry. I would still lean that it is Magic Johnson, especially when you guard 1 through 5 in terms of positions, too. I would go Magic, even though I think Steph's a top 10 player of all time. I have not heard this yet. This is on the Million Dollars Worth of Game podcast. Jaylen Brown asks, who's the best point guard ever?
I'm gonna go Steph. I think Steph is the greatest PG of all time.
All right, let's book Magic Johnson back on the show. Let's just recreate and recycle things that we've done in the past that have been successful and it will continue to be successful in the future.
I want an addendum to my choice, though, because I made that pick on Magic or Steph Curry. It's Magic. It's a tie, probably. Magic and Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Gotcha. So you would go, who would you pick between Magic and the Big O?
It's tough. I like Magic only, even though the Big O was so physically imposing, but Magic was a never-seen-before guy before and when he came on the scene. No 6'9" guy could do what he did.
All right, fair enough. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I think Magic's the greatest point guard of all time. Where do you put Steph Curry, then, in your rankings around?
You know, is he really a – you know, the game has changed so much where it's –
He's the greatest shooter I've ever seen.
Yeah, he transformed the game in a different way. He brought that 30-foot shot in. But, you know, a point guard, I'm still in the traditional mode of point guards. He's, he's a point guard, shooting guard slash.
By the way, social media can ruin something that you think is awesome and it could provide you the truth at times.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we think social media sometimes being mad and being a bunch of lies from time to time. So remember a few weeks ago when Steph Curry had that full court shot in warmups one-handed and it went in and everyone went nuts? I saw a TikTok over the weekend. The net moved because the ball hit the net, but the ball didn't go through the hoop. Like, totally just ruined a great moment for me. Well, we all thought it was good and then it's like, oh no, actually it wasn't. So in a weird way, I guess that's the good of social media, even though I also say it's the bad of social media too. Because I wanted to believe that Steph Curry made that shot. I was like, that they used to show that dress as a blue or gold or whatever it was. Did the Steph Curry shot really go in? Well, it didn't. All right, latest update. We'll come on back. We'll talk a little Suns and KD to wrap up the show. Update time first. Here is Zach. It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Psych Mamter on Twitter, at MoistMikeISN. Which I would love to know who he is, by the way. Because the people that follow him are Chris Persiainen, who works here. Andrew Kaplan, who works here. Then you have two porn bots, Abe Drinkin, who's a listener to the show. And then this guy, Wolfram Jack, who like tweets me all these links all the time. And like they're never funny, if I'm just being honest. Some of the things that he sends me. So I would really love to meet Psych Mamter. I would one day. But anyway, Psych Mamter says, who is the best golfer amongst the crew? Before I give you his commentary, Stu, have you ever golfed, just wondering?
Not actual golf. I've done like pitch and putt. That's the limit of what I've done.
Okay.
I've done top golf, so that's not true, I guess.
Gotcha. But you've never gone out, played 18 holes,
never.
Like drank some beers. I could see Stu after like 8 or 9 holes being like, yeah, I'm good. When I play golf, like after 13, 14 holes, I usually say I'm good. But I keep on playing, but I don't need to go play through all 18 holes of golf, if I'm being honest. Samter, how would you rate your golfing abilities? I'm sure you're going to be the greatest golfer ever, right?
I'm just going to say the house that I grew up in, behind our backyard was a little stream.
Oh, yeah, I knew this about you.
And behind that stream was a nationally ranked golf course that we would potentially maybe sneak onto.
Urinate in the creek?
All the time. And we would go fishing. We would hit
urinate
balls,
in the creek?
Maybe do that. Yeah. But there weren't spectators around. We'd only do it at night.
Michael Samter by Esther.
We may have thrown some parties on the golf course. Ooh. And gotten kicked off. So, but we spent a lot of time on that golf course. So I'll let your imagination run wild with that.
Okay. So Samter, were you a good golfer? You didn't really.
Oh, I've never golfed in my life.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Wait, you lived on a golf course, but you never golfed in your life. You never played 18? You're kidding.
I've never played 3.
Really?
Yeah. So there was a hole right by my backyard
maybe
that we
on the
would play.
Green at 9 tonight, all right?
There was a par 3 with like a water hazard, and, you know, we would hit it off there every now and again, but I'd always hit into the water hazard. So I stopped playing.
So this is sad. I am not a great golfer, but I guess I am the best golfer on the show because I definitely play the most.
You're the only golfer on the show.
I'm starting to get good with my driver. I'm a better irons player, if I'm being honest, but I started to learn how to actually hit the driver. Ironically, the best part of my game is actually my short game. My friends say I'm a very good putter. So, you know, I'm decent. You know, I play quickly, even if I don't play well. And I always have good conversation, so people tend to enjoy to play golf with me.
Is golf for you the event and the winning, or is it the drinking and the camaraderie?
No, I don't need to get messed up on a golf course, but I will from time to time have a few substances when I'm on the golf course. So, yeah, I'll enjoy myself when I'm on the golf course. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's more so just, you know, hanging out with my friends that I grew up with, and we all like to play usually in the summer. And then afterwards, you know, I need an elite barbecue and a pool, all right? That's what I need to do after I play golf. You can submit a question by tweeting at INS Sports Center, at Zach Gilb, using the hashtag AskThePros. Stick O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Psych Mamter said, I could see Zach driving the ball well. Big Mike probably destroying his putter in anger. And Stu Kovacs playing great until he takes a smoke break before the back nine. That was the Ask the Pros question of the day. Finally, another one bites the dust out in the desert. We had Monty Williams, Frank Vogel, and now Mike Budenholzer. Three straight years, the Suns have fired coaches in the Kevin Durant era in Phoenix. So in Brooklyn, things didn't go well. This has just been an unmitigated disaster in Phoenix. And it's going to end with KD getting traded this offseason. We know that. I could see KD going to Houston, would be my guess. That's where I think he's going to wind up, especially with the relationship with Ime Udoka. I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze anymore. And has there been a truer statement than what Charles Barkley said since leaving Golden State, that Kevin Durant, he's a rider on the bus. He's not the driver of on the bus. And that's going to live with him for the rest of his career. His legacy is top 20 player of all time. Don't get me wrong. But there's going to be a little bit of a yeah, but with Durant. And I think in Brooklyn and then also really with the Suns, he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. He should have just embraced that villain role, and he should have never have left the Golden State Warriors. Alrighty, fun show today. Big thanks to Samter. Big thanks to Stu. Big thanks to Ack. Big thanks to each and every one of you, however you do consume the program, whether you watch us on YouTube or you listen to us on the radio or on Sirius. Big thank you to Chael Sonnen for joining us, Steve Sands as well. And we'll be back tomorrow, everybody, at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. Have a great Monday evening. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.